Hey everyone, welcome to the French Edge Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now in a moment, I'll be joined by my colleague Mike Neff to break down Martin Truex's dominating performance at Martinsville Speedway, which will lead him into the championship race at Homestead Miami Speedway. For the second consecutive week, we had a NASCAR fight, this time involving Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano. Both Neff and I sound off on why it's time to implement a third-party rule in NASCAR in terms of fighting. Todd Gilliland won his first career truck race on Saturday and sent a direct message to team owner Kyle Busch over the team radio. We discussed whether or not that was fair or foul, and if Gilliland burned a bridge with his comments. Finally, Bubba Wallace joins the show to discuss an uptick in performance in the 43 team over the past few months, recording four top 15 finishes in the past 10 races. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the French Edge Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Martinsville and hot dogs with Neff. All right, Neff, dominating performance at Martinsville over the weekend by Martin Truex Jr. I was watching from the press box, you were in the media center, and I thought it was an okay race throughout the field, just not for the lead. Because there was one on-track pass for the lead, and that was early in stage one. And since then, there was never a pass. Or stage two, sorry, with Larson.
I'll say the end of stage two.
Yes. Yeah. The first one was the pit stop incident for Hamlin when Truex got by. So one on-track pass for the lead, and that was with Kyle Larson on like 100-lap old tires. So I feel like you're going to go off about this race and how you didn't like it. But I truly thought it was okay throughout the field, just not for the lead.
I mean, we've beaten this dead horse beyond recognition, but it's the package, dummy. And again, it's a work in progress, and I know that. I'm hoping they will make some changes for next year, but we just don't need this big-ass spoiler on a short track or on a road course. It's infuriating that aero even matters at a half-mile racetrack, but you're doing 100 miles an hour or more, and try to stick your hand out the window of your car when you're doing 100 miles an hour, you will realize that air makes a big difference. And when you're hitting that giant blade on the back of the car, it pushes the air off to the sides. So whenever you get close enough to try to get by somebody, the air slows you down. So unless you have a significant advantage in your car, you're not able to get by people. And that's where in the pack, yes, we saw passing when a few different drivers ended up going to the back or falling back a little bit. But once you got up to the top 5 to 7, it was nothing. I mean, I don't know statistics of it, but the amount of passes in the top 5 had to be pretty minimal. And nobody proved that more than Denny Hamlin. I mean, Hamlin dominates the beginning of the race and looked like he was really toying with people, like he was trying different lines and experimenting, and nobody was getting to him. And they come in for their pit stop, and he has a bad pit stop and falls back to, like, 5th. And from then on, he spent the rest of the race trying to get to the front, and he never could make it back up there. So it just – it's a matter of there's just too much air coming off that spoiler. And – I mean, it's Martinsville, so it's going to be exciting no matter what we have in the pack, because you have people trying anything to get by people, guys driving over curves, guys trying to go to the high side, pinching people to the wall and all that kind of stuff, which we did see, but I still don't feel like we saw it as much. And I'm hoping that next year we knock this spoiler down. And I think it was Dale Jr. even brought it up. Just give me some kind of a wicker that's an inch or two high so that it keeps you from really wanting to spin out and leave the rest of it to the driver's hands. So, I'd give the race about a D, but it just – and that's – thank God it was Martinsville. If it was a mile and a half, it would have been an F. But the place is great, and we got to see nighttime racing, yeah. But it was – it was impressive by Truex, and needless to say, given that team 2 full weeks to really kind of focus on Homestead does not bode well for the rest of the pack.
No, that's dangerous for sure, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I do want to talk a little bit about the lack of action for the lead, and we talked about it just now a little bit. But I talked to Denny Hamlin after the race, and he said straight up, you know, I hate to say it, unfortunately, this isn't the old Martinsville. And I think we've seen that. And I don't think it's necessary. It's not that it's not the old Martinsville. It's that it's not the same, or not the right package. Yeah, it's not the right package for Martinsville. And so last night, recording this Tuesday, so on Monday, Matt Weaver of Auto Week, a friend of ours, came out. He did an opinion piece. And I found this stat crazy because you brought up how this has really affected the road courses and short tracks. And this stat that he has implements that. At Martinsville, this, I guess it would have been the spring race, there was two on-track passes for lead. This Martinsville, there was one. Now, Dover, not a short track, but we've touted this when, you know, for each of the Dover races. That race, those races were kind of pretty bad. And also, 2-1 lead changes from the spring and the fall. And then the two road courses, there was zero at Watkins Glen or Sonoma. Now, there was some other action throughout the field at Watkins Glen, but I mean, Chase Elliott dominated that race. Truex dominated this race. It's just, yes, there needs to be something done about this spoiler. And unfortunately, Neff, I mean, we've been critics of this package from day one. And unfortunately, it's kind of proved us right at the short tracks and the road courses, which we want more of the short tracks and road courses. Well, in order for there to be more short tracks and road courses, there needs to be better racing, and especially for the lead. So it's crucial for Martinsville, though, because next year they're the cutoff race for the championship. It's also the first night race of the year, Mother's Day weekend in May, which is going to bring a lot of people to Martinsville because it's a Saturday night race, first time ever. With this package, I don't know if we should expect anything less than what we've saw this weekend.
No, and the last thing I want to see when we have a cutoff race for the championship is to have one guy lead 487 laps, and basically your drivers that are fighting for that last playoff position or the last two playoff positions not be able to pass each other. I mean, that is the worst thing that we could possibly have out of the sport. So I'm crossing the fingers that cooler heads prevail, but as you said, our buddy Matt put out the column, and I know he has been an extremely vocal opponent of this package, to the point that he's had some discussions with people in the Glass Tower in Daytona about toning it down. But you can't tone down the truth. And right now the truth is that this package is bad and it needs to change. And it just, I'm terrified it's not going to. And I understand it not going to, because you're getting ready to have a completely new car in 2021. So you don't want to force these teams to do R&D and work to accommodate a new or change in your rules that's only going to apply for a handful of races next year. But at the same time, we got to do something, because this was just, I mean, between Keselowski and Truex, what, we have 900 and something laps led by two cars?
910.
Over 1,000 laps?
Yep.
I mean, 91% of your laps were led by two cars over 1,000 laps. That's just, arguably, and it's arguable because the ratings don't always back it up, but I think Martinsville is arguably your best track on the entire schedule as far as excitement and fan engagement for the race. But it's just, yeah, I'm frustrated, flustered, whatever you want to call it, praying that we get some kind of a change before Mother's Day gets here.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't think we will, because like you said, we got a new car coming in 2021, new everything probably in 2021. So, I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like this is probably what we should expect next year. And like I said, the action I thought throughout the field was all right. You had Chase Elliott moving guys out of the way, getting up to the top five before he broke an axle on pit road. Bubba Wallace had a great car all day. He moved Kevin Harvick out of the way once. And that's like playing with a bull. So you might not want to do that, but he pulled away from him once he got by him. There was other cars that made moves throughout the field. And I think what saved this race particularly was all the late rash of cautions. Although no one could do anything with Truex on the restarts, so
Byron tried.
Yeah,
I mean, I give our boy Byron a lot of credit. He drove a really smart race, and especially at the end, did everything I felt that he could to win the race, and it was just a matter of Truex was just a little bit better than he was. But it was darn close on that last restart. If he'd have gotten ahead of Truex, I don't think Truex gets by him, and I think we have a whole different bit of excitement going on in the Hendrick camp. Can I also throw one thing out here? Chase Elliott Nation, take a sedative. Holy crap, people, it's Hendrick Motorsports. Stop talking like they're giving him garbage. Everything I saw out of Chase Elliott's fan base was like, why is Hendrick giving him junk? They don't want to see him win. And I'm like, are you kidding? Are you seriously kidding? This is Hendrick Motorsports, arguably the flagship of the sport, although most people say Joe Gibbs at this point in time. But historically, yep, Hendrick Motorsports is the best team in the sport. And they have the equipment and the knowledge and the technology at par or above what everybody else in the sport has. So don't sit here and act like they're intentionally giving Chase Elliott bad equipment, because it's just not happening.
Yep.
Take your tinfoil hats off, put your number nine hats back on, and keep your fingers crossed that he can get something done when we go to Texas. But good Lord, I was dumbfounded at how many people were calling out Hendrick and Mr. H and just roasting them, acting like they intentionally gave Elliott parts that would fail.
Yeah, that's a little crap.
What would be the possible logical end game of that? Having the most popular driver in the sport and the guy that's been the best driver in your organization for the last 3 years to fail. I mean, it's just stupid. Yeah. But man, people lost their minds.
Yeah, for sure. The past 3 years, he's been the best Hendrick driver. Made the round of eight the past 3 years. He does have a lot of mechanical failures over the past 3 weeks, and I get, you know, it's not set up, obviously. He's Hendrick's driver right now. Yep. And that's with Jimmy Johnson on the team still, obviously. So, he had an engine issue this weekend in Martinsville, five minutes in opening practice. He had an engine issue at Dover 3 weeks ago, and then he had an axle break, coming out of pit road on Sunday. So, regardless, you know, he's mired back. We'll talk about points later, but he's in a must-win situation with two races to go for Homestead, and he could win one of them, I think. So, but you mentioned Byron, and that was the best race he's ever ran in the Cup Series from start to finish. And I honestly didn't expect it at Martinsville, because prior to Sunday, he had three starts at Martinsville, and his best finish was 20th, and then two finishes below 30th. So I thought it was funny. Post-race, Martin Truex Jr. said he thought that maybe they stuck Jeff Gordon back in the car.
Yeah.
because Jeff Gordon, you know, one of the best drivers to ever run at Martinsville. So, yeah, good for Byron. But, Neff, good for Truex, too, because you brought this up. They got, when they won, 3 weeks to prepare one car. And Truex said this, too. You're not going to take anything from even Texas to Homestead. Obviously, nothing from Phoenix to Homestead. Maybe some momentum. And obviously, he still wants to win. But Colt Pern doesn't even have to show up, honestly. He can just work on that car. And that's probably what he should do. And he obviously show up to the racetracks. But he's got one mission. That's to make that Homestead car pitch perfect for the championship race here in 2.5 weeks.
In all honesty, I would not be surprised if he didn't show up. And I think that would I think that would play a bigger mind game with the teams that are going up against him if he didn't. You know, and you may have heard the stories. I know you're not old enough to remember this, but back in the day, 1990, I believe it was, Mark Martin and Dale Earnhardt were basically head-to-head for the championship near the end of the season, and they went to Atlanta for a test. And Earnhardt's group unloaded the car, put left side tires on the right side of the car, and went out and ripped off a lap that was like half a second faster than the track record, and then parked the car. And Martin's team spent the entire day thrashing their brains out to try to match that time and couldn't do it, and didn't realize that they had done it by using the wrong tires. But it was head games. The whole thing was head games. And we've seen Kevin Harvick play head games for a while, whenever he makes it to Homestead. That would be a great head game for Truex if Cole Pern basically didn't come to the track in Texas and ISM and basically said, yeah, he's just back massaging on a Homestead car. I think that would mess with teams more than anything. Obviously, they probably won't do that, but because I know in reality, Truex would love to win all three of these races and really mess with people's heads as he's coming into Homestead. But they, I mean, I don't know that you necessarily say they're the favorite, but Joe Gibbs Racing is the favorite, and it's a matter of which Joe Gibbs Racing team is going to run the best at Homestead. But I think right now you're really going to have to do something special to knock the JGR squad off of the top spot.
For sure, and that's the way it's been all year. So it's interesting, though, with Truex, because he's got 7 race wins this year, which is 2 more than anyone else, and Hamlin has 5, Kyle Busch has 4. But it's a quiet 7F. Because he started off the year in the first 2 months, we're like, what the hell is wrong with Truex? Didn't win until Richmond, and that's, what, the 8th or 9th race of the year, so not that big of a deal. Then he won a spurt where he won 2 or 3 races. He won the Coke 600, he won Dover, he won Sonoma. But then after that, and there was some good runs in the summer, Loudon, Pocono, Watkins Glen, Michigan were all good. But going into the playoffs, 13th at Bristol, 15th at Darlington, 27th at Indy. And then obviously he won the first 2 races of the playoffs to follow that up at Martinsville with a win. So prior to this year, he'd won on no short tracks. This year he won half of the short track races, 3 out of 6. He's obviously stout at mile and a half, which is what Homestead is. He won there in 2017 as well. So you said he's not... You don't know if he's a championship favorite, and collectively, Joe Gibbs Racing is the championship favorite, which I agree. But a guy with 7 wins, I mean, shouldn't they be the championship favorite?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the stats. But again, as you mentioned, when they were coming into the playoffs, they weren't really hitting on all cylinders. And it's, to bring out a cliche, it's about the most Jimmy Johnson thing you ever seen. Except Johnson would usually win one of the last couple races before the playoffs and, you know, let everybody know, yeah, we were screwing around all summer, but now we're back. And Truex has kind of more turned it up now that they're in the playoffs. But I still agree that they've, as you said, they've won more races than anybody. They've hung around, but when you're looking at coming into the playoffs, they weren't exactly lighting it on fire. And that's the reason I have a little trepidation about it. But, yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it, I think Denny Hamlin's right there with them as far as favorites go. And Busch is a third, but right now almost a distant third. And I don't know if that's more performance or luck at this point in time, because it seems like Kyle has had the performance, but has had just some goofy things going on between running into Smithley and like this weekend getting into it with Almirola after they'd had some other contact a little earlier in the race. So it's, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that if you say Truex is the favorite, I'm not going to call you crazy. I would agree that you're justified in that call. Just from my perspective, I don't know that I'm ready to wave that flag vigorously yet.
For sure. You ready to go on a little rant enough?
I'm always ready to go on rants.
All right, here we go. Buckle up, because this could be a good one. And these are 2 of the championship favorites, too, in my opinion. You mentioned Hamlin. Joey Logano, I predicted him to get to the final 4. Right now, he is 4th. On lap, what was it, 460. Well, it was probably 458, probably 2 laps before Logano spun. Hamlin... I think he was running Logano tight, and that's no surprise in Martinsville. You got to get everything you can get off turn 4. Put Logano on the wall. Logano actually climbed the wall a little bit, which is interesting. And then one lap later, he, you know, had a flat tire, and then the next turn he spun out. Whether intentionally or not, I would imagine yes. So he could save a lap. Ultimately, it didn't hurt Logano too bad, because he rebounded to finish 8th, while Hamlin finished 4th. So before we get to the fight, Neff, what's your take on that incident? Was just racing deal? Because these guys do have a past history, as we know, at Bristol 2013, and then the next week at Fontana, obviously, battling for the win, and Kyle Busch got by for the win on the last lap, but Logano turned Hamlin, and Hamlin broke his back, essentially.
Yeah, it's...
And Dover, just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, they've had history, and let's be honest, Joey Logano's got history with a lot of people. It's not just Hamlin. But with this package especially, and we just talked about it, that there's really was no passing going on in the top five. And Hamlin finally gained a couple spots back and was starting to get a little closer to the front. He's doing everything he can to get there. And Joey, as he's known to do, races everybody as hard as he can. And they come out side by side out of the corner. I don't think Hamlin intentionally put him in the wall, but he didn't give him any room. And Joey ends up brushing the wall, right front tire climbs it a little bit, ends up making things really ugly. I mean, it was a racing deal. And so after we have a racing deal, we get on pit lane, and then things happen.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. I did ask Denny, though, because he mentioned after Dover that he and others are going to race Logano differently and harder than they would had Logano not been 20 laps down, 22 laps down, I think, at Dover, costing Hamlin essentially a stage win, the stage two win, and Truex got by. So I asked Denny if this, well, not retaliation, but was it just him racing him harder? And he goes, I've been fair to everyone. The two, Kozlowski, was crazy, just beating our back bumper off. Never was really inside, but would just dive and run into us. I just kind of took it all day long, just take it as short track racing. He cut me off at the end, that's short track racing. I don't like it. I also understand it's no big deal. We had contact with the 22 off turn four. He cut a tire. He got the worst end of it, but that's short track racing. It's the same thing he would have said if roles were reversed. So Hamlin's labeling it as short track racing, and I do agree with that. You know, there's Rubens racing at short tracks racing, and typically, you know, it doesn't result to flat tires per se. I can, which it did in this case, but what do you think about Hamlin's comments? Because it seemed like he was just saying how it is, and that's what he expects. He expects to be also raced the same way.
Well, and remember, we've got the new, kinder, gentler Denny Hamlin these days, too. I mean, the guy literally last week at Kansas pulled over and let Jimmy Johnson by before the end of the stage so that he wasn't the lucky dog. You just don't see that in the sport anymore. But Denny made the comment post-race that, you know, he was building up some goodwill that he hoped in the future would pay off. And Denny never gave a crap about goodwill 5 years ago. Yep. But now he's in a different mindset. And his mind is still there for now. But I still wonder where we are when we get to Homestead. And that's I guess we have to wait and see that he gets to Homestead. But assuming he's in the mix, if we have a situation like we did this weekend where they have a really bad pit stop and it costs them dearly at Homestead, will he still be the kinder, gentler Denny, or is it gonna cause a meltdown? Because that's his history. And until the reality is different from history, that's what we have to go on. So for now, I think it was Joey racing like Joey. It was the kinder, gentler Denny. And then when we got to pit lane, they decided to have a discussion. And once we had the discussion, to talk to Denny about it afterwards, Denny was basically like, he was trying everything he could to get under my skin, and I wouldn't take the bait, so he finally pushed me to push me over the edge.
Sure.
And that's, if you've seen the video, that's what happens. They're sitting there talking, and Joey, I believe, was done talking, but as he goes to walk away, he, like, gave a stiff arm to Denny, and that was the one thing that seemed to push Denny over the edge.
Right.
Similar to last week when you and I were talking, and you were saying that Custer came up and gently put his hand on Reddick, and my argument is, if you think somebody's mad at you and they touch you, you don't take the time to figure out if they intended in a hostile way or not. I think Joey was angry and hostile and wanted to go, and Denny was like, let's go, and Joey like pushed him off and ran away, or at least walked away briskly, and that's what led to the craziness on pit lane, which will hopefully tip me off here in a minute after you recap it.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, we were both there. I don't know where you were when the race ended, but I was walking down pit road, and I there's obviously a bullpen that NASCAR has the media go to now. That's a discussion for another day. But Logano and Hamlin were about two or three cars. There was two or three cars in between them because you had all the top 10. They finished fourth and eighth. So I'd guess there'd be three cars in between them. I thought something might happen because Logano was not happy on the radio. And I would say rightfully so. I feel like he was maybe done wrong a little bit. But like Hamlin said, that short track racing. So you could counter that too. And so I thought something might happen. And then it took a while for this to escalate. Like a few minutes. Unlike the Reddick and Custer, where that was pretty quick. Custer came down to Reddick, and then they're off for the races. But, you know, they were talking to their teams. Hamlin was talking to whomever. Logano, too. And then, you know, I went to the bullpen, other media. No one was over there when it happened, except Josh Merriman from NASCAR.com, who has a good video of it, which I suggest y'all to look at.
Let's see. I was there, but I was on the inside of the pit wall, so I couldn't really see much of anything.
Got it. So then they're talking to Truex or whatnot, and then I hear commotion because the bullpen that NASCAR has us in is only 150 feet away or so, and it was around the little corner. It was right on the corner there of the pits in turn one and two. So I started running over there, and I saw the commotion. I'm like, holy crap. And, yeah, like you said, it looked like Logano just gave him a stiff arm, which was more I don't know what the right word is. Malicious? More stiff, I guess I'll just say, than Custer's. Because Custer was laughing, too, at Reddick.
It was more aggressive than Custer's.
There, aggressive is the right word. And, you know, Custer was laughing when he did it to Reddick. Logano was not laughing. And these guys have a history. So Hamlin, yep, set him over the edge, went after him. And then this, the fights, whatever. We talk about it. We want race. We want fights. I mean, that's entertainment. And it's good for the sport. Rivalries are good for the sport. However, what's not good for the sport, and we ran into about it just last week, is crew members getting into it enough and then throwing drivers, throwing Denny Hamlin, this guy named Mule. I think his real name is Dave Nichols. I might be misspeaking about that. I have to look it up again. But nicknamed Mule, threw Hamlin off and chucked him to the ground. It looked like a spike almost. Hamlin's lucky he didn't hit his head off the concrete or anything because he could have been, you know, knocked out, got a concussion, whatever. Hamlin got up and tried going back for some more, ultimately got stopped, but man, it was wild. And I know you're going to go off on the team aspect here, because I think 2 weeks in a row, this proves that NASCAR needs to do something. It needs to be black and white now. There needs to be some kind of rule going forward.
Yeah. And fortunately they are fining Mule and, or at least
suspending him.
I don't remember if they fined him or not. They should fine him and suspend him. But yeah, I mean, I talked about it last week. I'll talk about it until it gets changed. And I don't know if it's going to take a driver injury to get it changed or what. You know, it seems like we always have to be mostly reactive in this sport instead of proactive. But Mule, I mean, it was basically a horse collar tackle.
Yeah.
He grabbed Denny by the back of the collar and flung him to the ground, which gives you an idea when a 200-plus well, almost 300-pound dude grabs a 160-pound guy by the neck, you can do some damage. But he flipped him down, and then it was a scrum, and Mule ended up on all fours, like, trying to crawl away, and lots of screaming and finger-pointing and stuff was going on. But I continue to beat this drum. The dispute, argument, frustration, whatever you want to call it, is between the drivers. The teams have got nothing to do with this. Keep the team members out. Let the team members fight with each other. If they want to go out and scrap on their own somewhere else, great. But let the two drivers discuss, throw hands, leg wrestle, whatever they want to do, until somebody falls down on the ground. And then either NASCAR officials or law enforcement needs to break them up and send them along their separate ways. And what that achieves is you expel the hostility and release the anger. And so going forward, yeah, they'll not like each other, and yeah, they will talk shit to each other, but I women won't understand this. We'll leave women out of the discussion because they hold grudges forever. But you can have two guys, whether they're friends or not friends, that are in a bar and get in an argument and have a fight in the bar or outside the bar. As long as the fight is allowed to finish within a day or a week or even an hour, they're laughing and having a beer together because it has played out and the anger has been expelled. But if you let them, like, talk crap and point at each other, but you don't let them throw hands, a week later they end up back in a bar on the next Friday night. They see each other. They're immediately talking crap and getting ready to throw hands again. And in racing, that leads to cars getting torn up and more work for teams and more money wasted. When if you just let them scrap and get it out of them, yeah, they may not like each other, but it releases the anger. And that's what we really need in this situation, is a release of the anger. But if you keep letting these teams get involved, and I've heard from a dozen team members since this went down, and every one of them to a man says it's our job to break that up. And I'm like, I'd like to see that in your job description, because I don't believe that. I believe that that is all these team guys in their head, because they want to jump in and be part of this. But every driver, I talked to two drivers and a former IndyCar driver, and Max Pappas, post-race in the garage after this went down, and all three of them were like, we want to fight. If we're angry enough at someone that we want to fight, let us fight and get it over with, instead of holding on to that anger. And I don't – it frustrates me, because NASCAR will play the politically correct statement that we don't want fights and it's not the way to settle it. But at the same time, they're going to replay the video from this weekend of the fight over and over again to build up anticipation for next week. And if Logano and Hamlin are both in it at Homestead for the championship, you know NASCAR is going to be playing that video. And it's like, you can't have it both ways. So we need to set up some kind of parameters, which I still maintain anybody that jumps in after the two drivers should be fined and suspended, will eliminate this melee mentality and let us allow the drivers to vent their frustration to each other, however that manifests itself, and then be done. And in the long run, it is better for the sport, because we end up having less stuff torn up on the track and we have more excitement for the fans.
Yeah, that's good points for sure. And like I said, it needs to be in black and white from now on, I truly believe. And maybe that's going to be something they do over the offseason, just get through this year. But honestly, they should probably do it now. Because, you know, you look at the other professional sports, football doesn't really have a rule. The NHL, I'm not a big hockey guy, but the, you know, NHL does have a rule where if you fight, like, you set your gloves down, you're fighting, third member comes in, they're gone from the game. The NBA is similar, where, and I remember watching a game last year, I want to say it was between the Denver Nuggets and Utah Jazz, where Nikola Jokic was on the bench, and he's the Nuggets' best player, one of the best players in the league currently. He was on the bench. He stepped on the court. He didn't even go towards the fight. There was a fight breaking out, big fight.
Yeah, he took like two steps on
the court. Yeah, he wasn't doing anything, but just because he went on the court, he got suspended for a game. So maybe it shouldn't be that extreme for NASCAR, but I feel like it should be an NHL rule where if a third party comes in, you're done. You're gone for a week, however long. So will that happen? I don't know. I'd hope that they implement it soon or do something because we can't. This is 2 weeks in a row now where, like we were talking off air about this, if what happened to Reddick last week happened on the street, those crew members would have got arrested for assault. So, and honestly, I mean, Mule, I mean, maybe, I don't know, that was just a forceful spike.
I don't think he intended for it to have the consequences it did.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to grab Denny and pull him away. And he just didn't properly estimate the fact that Denny doesn't weigh a lot. And he yanked on him and it flat out flipped him to the ground. But I mean, it was violent.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know there was intended to be violent, but it was. And as I said, if we don't stop this and a move like that happens, if he had been a foot closer to the pit wall, the outside pit wall, his head could have hit that wall. And can you imagine if Denny has to miss a race because of a concussion from that, the implications on the championship? And then what do we have? Does NASCAR pull a 2013 and we put five guys in at Homestead because Denny wasn't given a chance to race it out for the last two races? that would be total pandemonium and chaos. Everybody'd flip out. So it's, we don't need it. We need to nip this in the bud and let the drivers settle.
I agree. And hopefully, like I said, hopefully that's something NASCAR's looking into. I'm sure they are. But it's, will anything get done by the end of the year? I don't know. Probably not. I'll probably have to wait till the off season. But I think they should definitely look at something like the NHL. And you know.
Yeah, they should change rules like that midstream, but you never know.
Yeah, and we only got 3 weeks left. So, Neff, there was another conflict during the race, and Eric Almirola was pretty upset after the incident with Kyle Busch. Now, this started flashback about 6.5 months. It was at the same track, same turn. Kyle Busch moved Eric Almirola out of the way in turn three, and Almirola had a chance of moving Kyle out of the way in turn three on Sunday, and that's what he attempted to do. And then their cars kind of got hooked together off turn four, and then somehow Kyle spun and nobody hit him. Almirola did get clobbered by Jimmy Johnson, and they're both having good runs. Almirola, for sure, he's running top five a lot of the first part of the day. Now, he said, you know, he's going to make it hell for Kyle over the final 3 weeks. Kyle doesn't need this, Neff. He doesn't need extra, you know, extra activities going on in his life where he's got to worry about that instead of going after the goal, which is the championship. But as we've seen in these playoffs, Kyle's been distracted by other drivers and all year by the rules package. So what do you feel about this?
I mean, Almirola can make it hell if he can get to Kyle.
Right.
And that's going to be part of it if they've – and there are times when he can. Don't get me wrong. Almirola has cars on occasion where they're able to run up front, but it's not consistent. So will he be at a point where he's near Kyle over the next couple races to make it difficult? I don't know. Again, I don't like the idea of somebody who's not in the championship run – messing with people that are in the championship run. And that's the uniqueness of NASCAR, is that you have non-playoff and playoff competitors running side by side. And if one of them gets mad at a playoff contender and it plays out that they ruin a playoff contender's day, that's not a good look or a good narrative for NASCAR. But unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast. So I understand Almirola being a little upset about it, but at the same time, it was kind of like him when they were racing. And, you know, Kyle didn't give him any room. I mean, pushed him all the way down to the curb, and Eric was banging the curb as he came off the corner that ultimately caused them to kind of get hooked together. And like you said, it's amazing to me that Kyle Busch was perpendicular to the outside wall across the middle of the front stretch coming off of turn four, and basically 30 cars, I think, went by him without making contact. I've seen it once or twice in my life, and it's still an amazing thing. But Busch ended up having an okay finish to his day. It wasn't great. And it, again, I think they were like a sixth-place car all day, and that's kind of around where they were. So it just – they've got some things to figure out over there in the next couple of races if they want to have a real shot when they get to Homestead, assuming, again – that they're in contention right now. From a points perspective, they are, but we know that can evaporate in a hurry. But it's Almirola's got a – I would rather see him focus on winning a race and making hell for Kyle by winning a race and forcing Kyle to point his way in rather than trying to do something silly and try and ruin his day by making contact with him.
So I partially agree with you, partially don't, because I do think that – the championship, the playoff drivers, and, you know, Almirola was a playoff driver and got eliminated in the first round.
Was, yeah.
So as that continues on with the current playoff system, and one I think we'll probably keep for a while, yes, you should respect the competitors for the championship, yeah, maybe more than other drivers on the track or other guys you have beef with. However, you can't be a pushover because you're still racing. Almirola's racing for fifth in points,
yeah,
or at least to race as high as he can in points. And he has a corporate sponsor he's representing, which Smithfield has done a lot for him over his career, the past 8 years since joining Richard Petty Motorsports. So, I mean, I agree partially, but again, like I said, you can't be a pushover, and Almirola wasn't going to take it. And that's something that we haven't really seen. We haven't seen, I'm not going to say an aggressive side of Almirola, but that fighting side. So will this escalate into a fight? Probably not. I don't see it. Almirola's really nice guy. Not that that matters. He's fierce behind the wheel, but, I think they'll go their own ways and Kyle be fine. Elmer will be fine. But Kyle does have to figure something out, Neff, because it's been a bad playoffs for that team. They don't have a win. They haven't won in 19 races. Finished 14th at Martinsville, which is a track he had 8 straight top fives entering. His average finish in the playoffs is 14th. So I don't know what's going on there, Neff, but they need to figure it out pretty quick.
Absolutely. In all honesty, it's been a whole second half of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, they've, for the last half of the season, they have just not been clicking. And it's one of those deals that with this package and the way this thing races, it's a knife's edge. And if you get slightly off one way or the other, you can't get back with just driver talent and aggression. And in the past, Kyle could make up for lack of car sometimes, but right now he's not able to.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see. He's won ISM the last 2 races with the current configuration. So, he needs to figure something out because he's in a decent points position, but he lost points to the cut line this week. So he needs a better performance at Texas. But Neff, kind of a scary situation Saturday morning prior to opening cup practice. Matt Tiff suffered what turned out to be a seizure. Nobody really knew. Word was going around, but it wasn't announced until Tuesday morning. On behalf of Matt Tift, Matt Crafton competed in the 36 car at Martinsville, finished a respectable 25th, but John Hunter Nemechek's taken over the car the rest of the year. So this is just a tough deal. Matt Tift, who's unfortunately had health issues in the past.
Yeah, he put out a statement Tuesday morning to let everybody know the update and to confirm that it was a seizure. For those that don't know the history, Matt at one point had a brain tumor and had to have that removed, but came back to racing, which is an amazing story in and of itself. During his statement on Tuesday, he did make note that of the testing they did, they checked and there is no recurrence of the tumor. So that's a very positive, upbeat thing. Unfortunately, right now, they don't know what caused it. And so it's going to be a matter of doing some testing and doing some searching to try and figure out what caused the seizure to happen, because obviously you can't be driving, let alone driving race cars, if you're subject to seizures. And so we're all praying for him. He's one of the nicest guys in the garage and a talent for sure that is slowly developing his career. And we would hate to see his career get cut short over something like this. For now, kudos to John Hunter. Nice of him to get some cup starts under his belt. But absolutely praying and hoping that Matt is able to get a clean bill of health over the next 4 to 6 months and able to jump back in a race car in the not-too-distant future. Also hated on his Rookie of the Year campaign. He was a distant third. I don't know that he had any shot of winning it, but you hate to see somebody not be able to get to at least compete for it all the way down to the end of the season.
For sure. And I've known some people that have, I don't know if it's symptoms of, like, you know, they have seizures or whatnot. And by law, it's 6 months that you can't even just drive a car. I had a friend in high school that he would have seizures and he tried to get his license, but then it'd get pushed back because if you have a seizure, you have 6 months that you have to wait to drive. So I don't know if that's the case with racing too, I would imagine, but also we've seen drivers that don't have their car license, their driver's license, win a championship this year with Sam Mayer. So I don't know what the regulations are on that. I don't recall there being a driver that had a seizure that I, off the top of my head. Terrible.
Yeah, I don't either.
Tough situation for Matt Tiff for sure. And like you said, you know, he was in that Rookie of the Year battle, which is a good battle right now. I know it's for like 25th in points, but it's a dead tie with 3 races to go between Daniel Hemric and Ryan Preece. Our thoughts and wishes are out to Matt Tiff and hope he recovers well and we'll see him at a track soon. That's a tough deal because the way he was describing it in the video is he was making a coffee. And this was early in the morning because practice in Martinsville on Saturday was at 9 o'clock, opening practice. He said his tongue got stiff, and then he blacked out, and he woke up in an ambulance. So, tough deal for sure. But hopefully all's well there. But Neff, on Saturday as well, later that day was the truck race. And this was an entertaining one. It was also kind of a demolition derby, not much of a race. But Todd Gillen got his first career win. And then immediately as he crossed the finish line, I didn't believe this till I actually heard it. He said, "Good job, guys. Kyle Busch, stay in your fucking motorhome." He screamed this over the radio. It's been public. Kyle Busch has made it very public for months, since May, June, July. I know he told me in June that his truck team was not performing up to expectations. This is Todd's first career win. It's kind of saddening that he had hate in his mind, I guess you could say, when he crossed the finish line and got one of the biggest moments of his life so far. So how do you feel about this one?
I mean, it was one of those deals where that is a lot of pent-up frustration. Mm-hmm. And it's not just directed at Kyle. I mean, and even Todd admitted it post-race that he's not happy with the way they've run. And he's been frustrated thinking they should be better. And I guarantee he is putting a ton of pressure on himself. And don't think for a second that he's not pissed about the fact that Harrison Burton's running in the Xfinity Series next year. Because there's no doubt, or little doubt, that if Gilliland had won three or four races in that truck and Burton hadn't, that Gilliland would probably be going in that 20. I mean, yes, there's some dollar stuff involved, but in reality, Joe Gibbs is not going to take a guy that's won multiple races and leave him in trucks and move up a guy that's not just for dollars. At least I would hope not. But I give Todd a lot of credit because Kyle, as you said, has been very vocal about the lack of performance in his truck efforts. And both Harrison and Todd have been thrown under the bus numerous times this summer, and rightfully so. I mean, I've been arguing with a lot of folks since the race win by Todd, and they're all pointing out that the 51 is on an island, and it is far better than the 4 and the 18. And I consider that complete garbage, because similar to JGR or Hendrick or any of these big organizations, when you're building these vehicles and putting them on the racetrack, as they're going through being constructed, they don't have numbers on them. It's just a chassis, and it's just an engine, and they put them all together. Yes, Rudy Fugle is the man, and he is a better crew chief than the other guys that have been on those other boxes. But to be honest with you, Bono Mannion does not suck, and Bono Mannion knows how to win races. And so I'm not throwing it all on Rudy Fugle. Yes, he's good, but he's not the end-all be-all either. And the equipment that those guys have got is capable of winning races. And the fact that they not only aren't winning, but they're not finishing second and third is, again, speaking volumes that there should be better performance. So I give Todd a lot of credit because he was thrown under the bus and raked over the coals numerous times in the last few months, and he did not fight back, did not publicly anyway, call anything out or try to point any fingers or to deflect any blame. He put it all on his shoulders silently and went on about his business. And now when he's finally got the ability to brag on himself, he chose a colorful way to brag, but I don't blame him. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't talk to Kyle about it or afterwards check it out. Kyle went to the stage, shook Todd's hand during victory lane. They were both smiling, although if you look at the picture of it, the smile on Todd's face absolutely looks a little bit forced. But I would be willing to bet that today, if you saw Kyle and you asked him about it, Kyle would laugh and would probably think that it was justified. And honestly, is probably happy to see that kind of fire out of Todd.
Yep.
So I don't blame him. I think it was a genuine, honest display of emotion that he would have liked to have taken back and used a little bit less colorful language. But in the end, I ultimately respect him for his statement, and I believe in him when he is the intent of what he said was, this was a win for my team, and my team is going to celebrate this. Kyle, you can go ahead and just stay out of it because this is for us. And so that ultimately was the intent of that statement, although, as you said, it was way more colorful. But it was, I think it was justified, and I think Todd's not going to apologize for it. And Todd will still tell you that even though they won one, he's still not really happy with their performance, and he wants to win two more before the season's over.
Yeah, and he backed it up post-race, too. He said he probably shouldn't have said it, but he doesn't take it back. And like you said, I do think, in a sick way, I think Kyle Busch kind of would respect this. Because he... I wouldn't expect that from Todd Gilliland. In my opinion, he's a soft-spoken man who's trying to make a name for himself in NASCAR, who's underperformed at Kyle Busch Motorsports and been put in the spotlight by his owner. And so this was him just kind of sticking it to his owner, in my opinion. And, yeah, like you said, he didn't want him to be any part of the celebration. Now, I don't think Kyle had probably heard about this yet when the picture was taken when he went to go visit him in Victory Lane.
Oh, I bet he did.
I don't know. I don't know.
I may be wrong, but word spread awful damn fast when that happened.
I did.
I believe somebody from Kyle Busch's organization hadn't heard about it by the time he got to the stage.
It did, but I don't know. Regardless, sitting here on a Tuesday, I think their competition meetings are usually on Tuesday. I do think Kyle probably respects the move. And it's something Kyle probably would have done 15 years ago.
Yep. So, absolutely. When Kyle was 18 or 19, I guarantee you he would have done the same thing.
Right. So, you know, happy for Todd that he finally got his first win and for him to not finally perform, because he's had decent runs in the car at times. He should have won like 3 races last year. Let's not forget he got wrecked by his teammate Noah Gragson at the road course in Canada. Ran out of fuel on the last lap of Texas, allowing Justin Haley to win. And he's been a front runner. He unfortunately missed the playoffs this year. So, good for Todd. But with that said, Neff, even though Kyle might respect it, I feel like it burns a bridge. There's no way he's coming back next year. And because also no one knows what he's doing. It seems like he doesn't know. Granted, he does have his dad's team, DGR Crosley, that he could fall back to. And I think that's probably likely at this point.
I agree. I mean, it's definitely not a good look if you're trying to keep your job. But part of me thinks that he already sees the writing on the wall that he's not going to have that job next year.
Yeah.
But you never know. As you and I just said, Kyle may like that. And that may be a thing that actually spurs him on to really look at rehiring him, because it may have shown some fire and some bite that Kyle wasn't sure he had. So I don't cross it completely off the list, but I agree. It's not a good interview tactic, and I don't know that it's a great way to hang on to a job or get a job for another year, but I agree. I mean, he's a K&N West champion. He's won races at every level that he's been in now. And I don't see any reason for that to change. If he's not in a KBM equipment, I see him being in somebody else's next year. And assuming it's decent equipment, I think he'll be contending for wins in that as well.
And that might be what he needs, because we've seen other young drivers, Joey Logano comes to mind, where you don't perform with a top team. And Kyle Busch Motorsports is the top team in the truck series. They don't perform well with that team. They go elsewhere and they do well. So maybe that's just something that Todd needs. And racing for his dad, I mean, hell, they got Tyler Ankrum in the playoffs. He won at Kentucky and has a chance, which we'll talk about now, of making the championship race, because you know they only got one race enough now before they get to Miami, which is the penultimate weekend of the year at Phoenix, and the truck playoffs are kind of shaping up. Moffitt looks to be in good shape. He's got 45 points. I mean, that's a near lock. Friesen 35, that's a near lock too, I would say. Then you got Chastain plus 20, who he came into Martinsville outside the championship for. And then Austin Hill plus 9, Crafton minus 9, and Anchor minus 15. So a lot of bad days for playoff drivers at Martinsville. You had Austin Hill, Moffitt, Crafton, Anchorum all have terrible days, finishing 23rd or worse for a whole variety of different issues. But how are you feeling about this truck championship four?
I mean, it's exciting. As the way the trucks have been running, anything can happen, especially if you talk to Matt Crafton about it. The Thort Sport guys are less than thrilled about spec engines these days, and they're not pulling any punches about it either, because we saw it again this weekend. Crafton, I don't know that I ever heard what the official problem was. They swapped out the battery a little bit, and that didn't make a difference, and then he ended up running the rest of the race. So I'm not sure what they ultimately changed on his truck that got it back to competitive, but you know, they got bit again by a problem in the spec engines. So the spec engines are a wild card that I don't think we want in this mix, but they definitely had to be considered. But right now I mean Ross Chastain I thought was going to win the race on Saturday. He thought he was going to win the race on Saturday, but as he pointed out post race, he was battling three trucks instead of one. And he made the comment that when he moved Gilliland in one and two, he thought he had the race won. And then Burton got to his back bumper and almost wrecked him. And that's when he knew he lost it. So it's as long as he's able to get out front and get away from the KBM trucks, I think he'll be good at Phoenix and probably win and advance on. And I don't think anybody wants a piece of Ross Chastain at Homestead. But other than that, I mean, I love trucks because most anything can happen. And it seems like on any given weekend, some guys are good and some guys suck. And that throws some really interesting, you know, scenarios at you when you're trying to handicap this thing. But I'm not counting Matt Crafton out at all. I mean, that dude, you look at the look in his eyes when he got out of the truck at Martinsville, because I was actually walking my way down towards the bullpen on pit lane and got to him before I got down to the bullpen, and he was fired up. I mean, it was Johnny Sauter-esque. And if you heard him on the radio, I thought Johnny Sauter was on his radio. I mean, Crafton gets fired up and ain't afraid to speak his mind, but I have the amount of F-bombs that were flying around on his radio is something I've never really heard Crafton say before, but he let them all know it. So I think he's on a mission to get something done at Phoenix. We'll see if he's able to, but I think it's anybody's game. I mean, I think that's the beauty of the truck series is that anybody on any given Saturday or Friday can take the win and put themselves in position. And we're going to find out when we get to Phoenix, but I'm not counting anybody that's in the six out at this point in time.
For sure. Yeah, I think the four that are in there are probably the best four that could be in there. Hill's won three races. Chastain's won three. Moffitt's won three or four. Friesen won Eldora, but it's been pretty consistent all year. But he won, and that's something like that a Grant Enfinger can't say. He hasn't won, although he was consistent and had this be, you know, no playoffs and just straight-up points from Daytona, he'd be second in points. Instead, he's relegated to eighth currently because he's had a terrible playoff. So I think the four that are in there now are – I don't know if they're the ones that are going to be in there following Phoenix. I think Crafton does have a good shot of getting in there. And then don't count Akermount either because he's shown speed all year when he's been racing. So –
I think that'd be an awesome story if you see Ankrum win at Phoenix to make it to Homestead.
For sure. Now, if we didn't really break down the Cup playoffs, so let's do that real quick. Truex is into Miami, and this is how good he's been in the playoffs. He's 20 points up over Hamlin, and sure, that's, you know, really because of one race. You got max points at Martinsville, but 20 points is quite a bit under this format in one race. Bush is plus 17 to the good. Logano plus 15. Plus 14, sorry. Harvick minus 14. Blaney plus minus 15. Larson minus 24. And Chase minus 44. Chase isn't a must win, right? I mean, only two races, 44 points.
So mathematically, no. But in reality, yeah. I mean, you're not You're not making that up without just because of the other people you're running against.
Right.
You know, I mean, those guys.
And they're the front runners.
generally don't have a bad day like that.
Right.
And so the odds of somebody besides Kyle Larson having a DNF are pretty slim. Right. And Larson's below the cut line, so he's not one you're looking at. But when you're looking at Hamlin, Bush, Logano, and Harvick, I mean, that's their outside of Hamlin, you're looking at all former champions. You know, your top five have got four champions and Denny Hamlin. And Hamlin is looking the strongest out of all of them, I think. So they're not going to have a day where you're going to make up 30 or 40 points. So, yeah, Elliott has got to win, and provided he doesn't get all the test equipment that everybody says Hendrick has given him at the next two races, maybe he can.
I think Larson has to win, too, because 24 points,
yeah,
that's not a – I mean, that's 24 points, 24 positions – but that is quite a bit for only one race in. And really, I mean, he just had an average race, finished second in one of the stages, stage two, because of a good pit call by Chad Johnson. Otherwise, he'd be like 35 points out because he wouldn't have got any stage points. So, yeah, I mean, Larson, I feel like he's in a must-win. And then you got Harvick and Blaney. I don't think Harvick's in a must-win at all because we've seen that four team, when they're on, and they can make up 14 points, I think, pretty easily. Or even
there's Phoenix.
Yes, and Phoenix.
that's the thing. You got Harvick going to Phoenix. You never feel bad about that.
I think he can make up 17 on Kyle too. So I mean, I think Harvick will probably make the championship four. Blaney minus 15, not must win. But I would say he told me after the race he's happy to just do what they did on Sunday because he had a pretty good race, top five throughout the entire race, and gained points on the cutoff, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, and he was a little irritated post-race. Mm-hmm. I think he was not too thrilled about the way some people were racing him.
His teammates.
And I heard that from a handful of guys. And again, I contributed to the package that, for lack of a better word, you got to drive like a dick with this package to get past people, especially the short track. And unfortunately, that tends to irritate people and cause tempers to fly, which is why we need about 20 more short tracks on the schedule.
For sure. Anything else, Neff, you'd like to talk about?
I mean, on the truck side of things, they got to do something with this spec motor deal. I mean, the purpose of a spec motor is reduced cost and increased reliability. And right now, the cost reduction has not panned out to be what it was promised to be. It is cheaper than Bill Motors, but not as cheap as the teams were sold. And reliability has obviously been a problem. And when you've got everybody in your sport basically using this spec motor and championships are being impacted, if not decided, by whose motor doesn't break at the end of the day, that's unacceptable.
Right.
And there's... I don't know the process or procedures that they have in place for these things, but they got to get somebody in here that can be more reliable, because for a spec motor, the amount of failures this year has been ridiculously high, and it's just not fair to the teams. And if you're out here putting everything you can into this sport and you're basically relying on a spin of the roulette wheel as to whether you're going to be running at the end of the race or not, it's unacceptable.
For sure. And there was one thing I do want to talk about cup-wise. Clint Boyer had a really good car on Sunday. I'd say he probably had top three car, honestly. Him, Byron, and Truex probably the three best cars. Unfortunately, Boyer couldn't really show anything for it because right before the end of stage two, he came down for a flat tire. And Neff, kind of one of the bonehead calls that I've seen in a while. They decided to go left sides only when
it was on the right.
On the right rear. I would say Clint probably would say that sums up their season to a T. I was listening to Door Bumper Clear, and Brett Griffin took the spotter of Boyer, took full responsibility. He said he thought the right rear was up. Now, from the press box, I could see the right rear was down. So I was shocked when I saw them only going with left side tires. I mean, mistakes happen, but that's just, and it's just dotting your I's, crossing your T's.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing that confuses me, and I realize stuff is happening really fast when you make that call. I mean, you're changing left side tires in somewhere between 4 and 5 seconds. So there's not a lot of time to make an adjustment on the fly. But if you're the tire changers and you both see the car pull into the pits, they don't run interliners at short track. So if the tire's flat, it's literally the rim sitting on the ground. So you know when you look at it that the tires aren't flat. That at that point, you should be able to key a radio on your head and say, hey, left sides are good. And then it's on your crew chief to decide if he wants to call the extra audible to run back around and do the right sides. But how they – I mean, because – and you heard Letarte losing his mind about it, that it ends up costing them dearly because you end up having to come down a whole second time and you end up losing a couple laps out of the deal. So it's – I understand that there's a lot of moving parts and pieces, and as Griffin took credit, and I understand that. But at the same time, there's got to be some on the crew chief and on the pit crew that they need to be able to make an audible call as that thing plays out. Because that was just, I'm with you, it was one of the most surprising things I think I've ever seen, where you knew you had a flat tire and let them drive back out with it on a car.
And regardless, they're going to go probably two laps down, so they... In you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but they probably should have took four tires, because then if you only take left side, you're going to have to come back down and take right sides at the stage break, because this was only 8 laps to go before the second stage ended, where they ended up throwing a caution because of Boyer. he would have had to come back down and take right sides anyway, or left, whatever side they decided to take. So he wouldn't have been able to get a lap back. In case that he took four tires, he would have been able to get the wave around and only be one lap down, and then his race isn't over. So... hindsight's always 20/20, but yeah, little bit of a surprising move by the 14 team. Something you don't see much from those big teams like that. So,
yeah,
which is tough for him because Martinsville is probably his best track.
Yeah, I mean, he was running top two.
Yeah,
for most of the first stage.
Yep. All right, Neff. Anything else before we get to Bubba Wallace?
Only other thing, and speaking of Bubba, is a big shout out and a thank you to this weekend. For those of you that don't know, I run a charity called the Racing Brotherhood Foundation. We help racers and families in times of need. And I got a wild hair talking to Dustin on Thursday, I think it was, to because he was asking how many hot dogs I was going to eat. And I just spouted off 20 because that's kind of my benchmark. And I said I should really try and eat them live on TV and get sponsors to raise some money for the foundation. And so I ran with that a little bit, and Corey LaJoy, J.J. Yaley, and Bubba Wallace all got on board to sponsor me for hot dogs, and had a couple people. We did it live at the start-finish line right before the broadcast went on air, and I did 20 dogs, although it took me longer than anticipated. It took me 28 minutes, but we knocked them out and raised some money for my foundation. For those of you that are out there in radio podcast land, if you'd like to be a part of it or help out, you can go to racingbrotherhood.com/donate and send some money along. It's greatly appreciated, and the more money we raise, the more drivers we can help. So big thank you to Corey, JJ, and especially our guest this week, Bubba.
How did you feel afterwards after eating those hot dogs? Because I was there watching you eat the first few.
I mean, I was full, and for an hour or so, I was uncomfortable, you know. You know, just when you're that full, I mean, breathing's even a little hard because your diaphragm can't do its whole thing. And my nose was running for some reason, which I don't really know why that was going on. But I sat in the media center for about 45 minutes or so, and then I went out and took a walk around the pits. And from then on, I felt really good and no problems. Didn't eat anything until Monday morning, but it was... It was fun, and for those who were asking, yes, they were fully loaded Martinsville dogs. They were not plain. I had a lot of people asking if they were just plain dogs, but no. Fully loaded chili, onions, and slaw.
Which I didn't, you know, I knew we were going to bring this up, but I didn't know it was going to take this big of a turn. Are you a fan of the Martinsville hot dog? I mean, I think
I love Martinsville.
I'm not that big of a fan. I don't know what it is about it. I had three over the weekend only because they were all free in the media center. All on Saturday. Two of them fully loaded, and then one of them plain hot dog. So I give you props, major props, for doing 20 in 28 minutes because I don't think I could eat 20 in 6 months. So kudos to you, Neff. Good job. And, you know, like you said, great job for Corey, Bubba, and JJ for donating per dog. Which, how much was it per dog? 20?
Corey? JJ and Corey both did $10 a dog. I'm not sure on Bubba because I was telling him anything would work. And if he just wanted to do $1 a dog, so it'd be 20 bucks. And as he walked away from me, he said, I'll do 20 a dog. But I'm not sure he understood the concept, so I'm not holding him to that. But if he did, that's phenomenal. So that's what I had. And then I said, while I was doing it, I had two different people come up and hand me $5 on pit lane while we were doing it, which was fun. And a big thank you, too. There was a little group of four people that sat on the inside pit wall for the entire event and cheered me on. And I went and talked to them afterwards, and they were from Brazil. And it was really cool. The dad from them did not speak English, so his daughter translated, and he asked how I was feeling. And I told him I felt great. I just really had to go to the bathroom, which he got a kick out of that. But they were hardcore into it racing fans from Brazil, and they thought this crazy American was really a hoot. And it just had so many people walking by and giving us thumbs up. And cheering me on really meant the world to me, and I thanked everybody for it. And I'm hoping we can really start to get the word out on this foundation and really get it to grow, because I feel like if we can get some momentum behind it, we can really be life-changing for some local racer guys whose lives are changed when bad things happen.
For sure. And even if Bubba weren't to donate, I know you said you weren't sure how much. It's still $40 or $20 per dog, and 20 times 20 is 400. So at least you made $400 for this good cause. But Neff, we talked about Bubba a little bit. He's coming on the podcast. Good conversation with him over the weekend. He's got four top 15s here in the past 10 races. So that 43 teams definitely turned the corner. How do you feel about Bubba?
And had a great run on Sunday.
Should have finished top 10.
One of those where they had a really good run. It's RPM, you know? You love the fact that they're still in the sport and they're a well-known name in the sport, but we all know that they're not upper tier. You know, they're middle to back of middle tier. And they have really... Especially since, I don't know, when they kind of mixed things up. I want to say it was around Charlotte.
Yep, Charlotte.
But they really kind of did a change up at their organization. And since then, they've really been running better. And they're slowly but surely figuring things out. And I say it all the time. I was talking to people about it again this Sunday. I cannot figure out how Bubba does not have corporations just lining up to sponsor him. I mean, he is... exactly what any corporation should want out of a driver. I mean, he's passionate, he's funny, he's committed, he's aggressive, and social media wise, he's as savvy as anybody in a garage. Mm-hmm. He's genuine, he's open and honest about his struggles that he's had with depression. I mean, it just, he is an ideal driver for a corporation. And I don't get why they aren't just beating his door down to be his sponsor.
Agreed. Well, Neff, let's get to my conversation with Bubba Wallace. Now, this year, it didn't start off the way you wanted it. But the last few months, you've been pretty good. Mm-hmm. Overall, how would you assess the season?
Yeah, I think ever since, I keep saying the 600 weekend, All-Star weekend, really, we've just kind of turned a notch and been able to step up some of the finishes. We haven't gotten what we deserve last weekend at Kansas, running 20th, right around there, 21st. And the hub assembly brakes, Michigan, running out of fuel. That sucks. That's on us. I hit the fence at Kentucky. We were running 12th, you know, and then cut a tire there. So just little things have taken us away from getting those really good finishes. But all in all, it's been a huge step up by everyone involved, and that's all you can ask for. So we'll try to finish out these last four races on the right foot to build us and set us up for next year.
Yeah, third in Indy, a couple top 15s, Bristol, and I believe Richmond.
Yeah.
What's led to the increase, you feel like? You said it's a constant improvement. It's just everybody, but
I think momentum, man. I mean, we just, you know, we're really meshing well as a team, you're making the right calls and getting the car to where it's drivable somewhat.
Nice.
But just awesome. I think once you get the communication factor kind of working and in hand in hand, that helps out a lot.
Now, at Indy, you were fast all weekend, but is there ever a point that we can, you know, you can't predict what's going to happen, obviously, in the race.
No.
But is there a point in the weekend where you're like, oh, this feels pretty good compared to last time we were here?
Yeah, Indy was just kind of a bizarre weekend for us. I mean, we showed up right off the truck, and I was like, man, I feel fast. Feels good. And we know we were P5 in that first practice, and I was like, all right, you know. P11 or so in the second one, and then people started doing mock runs. We fell back a little bit and qualified 12 and raced up to third, and that was pretty cool. It was just easy. And so, you know, you get a taste of what the bigger teams feel each and every week. You know, they can show up and know that they're going to run top five. And for us, it's like, I don't know, it's just the car is reacting really well and it has a lot of speed. So are we going to have that next weekend? We'll find out. And then you don't. You know, we went to Vegas and ran 23rd. So it's just small organizations, small team problems. You just, how's your car going to be? People ask me Monday and Tuesday going into the next race, and I'm like, I'll let you know after practice. I have no idea. So
you talked about momentum, but what did Indy do for your confidence?
I did a lot, you know, for sure. I think looking at who you're racing around, how you're racing them, and giving them and inside is like, all right, you know, Bubba's up here, not just because of a pit strategy. You know, his car's pretty fast, and he's maneuvering really well. You know, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't really care what they're thinking. But, you know, I definitely haven't lost touch on how to drive or how to race people and whatnot. So it's just one of those. It's just a perfect weekend for us.
Now, the last time I talked to you in depth was in the spring at Dover. You mentioned the biggest thing you learned from your rookie year last year to this year was kind of letting go of the bad days, but it's something you're still working on.
Yeah.
So are you still working on that?
No. Yeah, I think for sure. It's just so competitive. So I think everybody struggles with letting go of their bad days. I mean, I think I've been better after races. You know, you look at this is why we finished this way. It's like, man, we were running really strong. We were running 15th and broke a hub. You know, it's like, can't be mad at that. You know, it's just, that's just freak stuff. You know, I think I was before I'd get mad and just be pissed off at the world because that stuff would happen. And it's like, that's out of our control. You know, if it's in my control, then those are the ones I struggle with more. It's just like, damn it, I gotta stop making mistakes. But when it's not, it just wasn't meant to be.
And at Dover, you said that the goals for the team were really to finish top 20 on a weekly basis. Yeah. And since then, you've done that quite a bit.
Yeah.
So is that still the goal? Is it top 15 or is it a
top 20 for sure. You know, we got to get a little bit more consistent and, you know, eliminate mistakes. Most of mine, speeding on pit roads, hitting the wall. In the cup cars now, you barely touch the wall, you're cutting tires. So it's just one of those tough deals. You guys just got to clean it up a little bit, and then we can talk about moving into the next bracket.
Now, I know you're at the RCR event on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have the alliance with them, but how closely do you work with Austin and Daniel Todd?
Yeah, you know, we have our practice meetings after each practice session. Not after each, but after the final practice, we always have a meeting and debrief our cars and figure out, you know, a lot of us have the same tendency, especially this weekend, you know, when we enter in the corner, it does this, and everybody else kind of relates to that. So that makes it somewhat easy, but we just got to figure out how to be better and faster off the truck. Our speed as a whole organization, all four cars, is still behind. And, you know, we're trying. You know, I could do better and give him better feedback on what we need, but, you know, it just comes down to resources. And you know, big teams are spending numerous amounts of hours at the wind tunnel and seeing their numbers. So, you know, for us, I think we went to the wind tunnel for the first time before Indy, you know. So look what it did for us, but that also cost money.
That was your first time all year?
I believe so, first or second time, yeah.
Now, RCR, you mentioned the big team. It's a bigger team.
It's a bigger team.
So,
yeah.
So,
and I say big teams, I mean the ones that are winning every week.
Right. So, bigger team. you're running around Daniel in points.
Yep.
You're not far behind Austin or Ty.
Yeah.
So what's that say about a small team in RPM?
Yeah. Ever since I think Bob had tweeted out the first 13 races, points gain, and then from 13 until the season end, regular season end, you know, we were 26 in the first 13 or 29th, and then we were like 21st in the points there. And so we've definitely raised it up a couple notches. It's trying to climb back up the points. Kansas killed us. We lost two spots there. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've never been much of a points racer, but there's a little bit more incentive between Daniel and I just because we go back to, you know, ever since we started. So it's like, all right, I'll pass you here. So we got to maybe have a little money on the line to see if we can beat each other on points.
Curious of your take, because obviously the King was on Dale Jr. Donald this week. He mentioned in order for you guys to get better, RCR has to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pretty much the same thought?
Yeah, I mean, that's our alliance. That's the big brother, big sister that we're leaning on to relay information back from them to put in our cars to be better. So, you know, we got to find out how to help them. But, yeah, I'd say the root of it is RCR.
So a couple more for you, Bubba. You're 28th in points
right
now. 28th in points.
Yep.
But 25th through 28th, I think it's only like 14 points right now.
Yeah.
So how important is it to you to get top 25?
Yeah, it's very important. There's the payout, money payout, there's some money there too. So Daniel and I raced for the same agency. So they were like, yeah, you guys need to get 25th in points. It's like, yeah, either way, y'all get paid regardless. If I finish or he doesn't, or if he doesn't. So, but 25th, I mean, just as long as we just keep improving. And it's doable. You know, that's the 8, our 47, the 8, and the 34 cars that we can beat on the regular. So we'll see.
With the success you've seen over the past couple of months, how important, or how much are you looking forward to next year?
You know, looking at everything that we've been able to do is if we can start off the season with how well we've ended this season, we can start much further ahead and do some bigger things.
Cool, Bubba. Thanks for your time.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
All right, y'all. So there you have it. Fun conversation there with Bubba, who I believe is arguably one of the most improved drivers from the first half of the season to the second half, and probably should have had a top 10 over the weekend in Martinsville, if not a top 5 before they had a loose wheel there at the end. Always fun to chat short track racing with Neff as we discussed hopefully the Martinsville and the short track product racing product as a whole improves before next season, though it might not because of the next gen car coming in 2021. But that's it for this week's show. Again, make sure to leave us a rating and review, and don't be afraid to follow us on social media with the handles at Dustin Albino, at MNF Short Track. He likes Short Track so much he's got it in his Twitter handle, and at Front Stretch. Until next week's show, where we review Texas, we out.